Todd Boehly has resisted the urge to sign the shiniest of objects, with news that Chelsea are now passing on the opportunity to pick up Cristiano Ronaldo. What does this mean for the want-away Man United star? And what does it say about Chelsea's new owner and the Blues' new way of thinking transfers? I'm joined by James Bench to discuss all and that much more on Que Golazo. Que Golazo begins now. Today's Que Golazo episode is presented by Gillette Clear Antiperspirant. For those who don't like to sweat, the choice is clear. Gillette is your ticket to all-day freshness. Gillette, the best a man can get. Hey, everybody. I'm Michael LaHood, and I'm joined by the one and only James Bench. Bench, how you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Ah, man, just sweating away in this Texas heat. And I was definitely sweating over what looked like to be the worst news of this transfer window. We're going to just dive into that. Cristiano Ronaldo and Chelsea.
Yeah, I'm trying to work out, is the worst news that Ronaldo's staying at Man United?
Oh, geez. You know, we could do that in the Man U deep dive as a United fan. I think so. That could be the worst of these. But the second worst was to go to a rival. And looking at this transfer saga, you know, how did this all come about? Let's go back to the beginning before we get to how we got here.
Well, I mean, it's pretty simple. You know, earlier this month or late last month, Cristiano Ronaldo told Manchester United he wanted to leave. You know, he wants to play in the Champions League. He is the Champions League's greatest goal scorer. He is kind of one of its most successful players ever, the face of that competition. And I think, you know, a player that's very conscious of his legacy and that wants to eke out as many years at the top of the game as possible, didn't want to be playing in the Europa League with Manchester United. He told them he wanted to leave. They said publicly, or they briefed publicly, that they didn't want to sell him, that they wanted him to see out the final year of his contract. And, you know, we are where we are now because no real interest has materialized. Chelsea, their owner, Todd Boehly, he spoke to Jorge Mendes, and Ronaldo was one of several things that they discussed in that meeting, and they've been mulling it. But the news has kind of come today from within the Chelsea camp that they don't want to sign Cristiano Ronaldo. And that pretty much leaves Ronaldo. I mean, we can talk about this a bit more, but it leaves him with very few tempting options in Europe. That much is sure, yeah, and certain.
Well, if you're Jorge Mendes and Cristiano Ronaldo, do you see this as an opportunity to probably take advantage or possibly take advantage of Chelsea having new owner and chairman?
Yeah, there's certainly a degree to which you could believe that is the case, that, you know, that Todd Boehly, he is acting not just as chairman and not only as part owner, but interim sporting director. There is no structure at Chelsea that will come. You know, they're working on getting a director of football, but I would be very, very, very surprised if he is in place by the end of this transfer window. So, you know, Todd Boehly doesn't know how European football works. He may well be attracted by stars. Any new owner will want to make a splash. So if you're Jorge Mendes, you do think, well, you know, let's talk to this guy. He's one of the few that can, I mean, also he's one of the few players, one of the few clubs, one of the few chairmen that can afford Cristiano Ronaldo. We're talking £500,000 a week in wages. We're talking, you know, Manchester United will want some form of transfer fee. It's a huge investment and not one that pretty much more than half a dozen clubs outside the Premier League could afford to make. So, yeah, I think there is an argument that maybe they were trying to test out Todd Boehly's footballing intelligence. And, you know, we can talk about this a bit more, but I think Todd Boehly's probably passed that test and this would not have been a good move to make for Chelsea.
Yeah, I think of a test like this, I'm so glad you said it in that way. I'm always doing song references and movie references, but any coming of age as an owner or as a businessman in a new sport or a new realm, these are the mini hurdles you have to get over. And, you know, Thomas Tuchel comes out as this is being decided, and ultimately Todd Boehly is the one who has to decide this. And he comes out and says, look, Ronaldo doesn't fit what I'm looking for. And Todd Boehly then has the opportunity to either you go with your new manager that you have that you're going to lean on quite a bit to understand the game, or you go against him and there's friction already from day one. And as we talk about Thomas Tuchel's system, how would have a Ronaldo fit in, or does he even fit in?
Well, I mean, you're certainly right to mention Tuchel, because I think in the end, if he'd been in favor of this move, It wouldn't have shocked me if it had all happened. I have an idea about how this fits in, how Ronaldo would have fitted in. I just don't think anyone in the Cristiano Ronaldo camp would have liked to hear it. You know, what are Cristiano Ronaldo's great skills in 2022? He has this sort of magnetic attraction to the ball when it's dropping in the penalty area. You know, he still has these magnificent strikely instincts, deadly in the box. He has this sort of, you know, this narrative power, especially in the Champions League, where he just comes alight. You know, there's no lead, no deficit is insurmountable when Cristiano Ronaldo is playing a Champions League game. But the guy does not press. He presses as frequently as a centre-back. And as you can tell me, Mike, you know, you used to play professional football. Centre-backs don't really press, do they?
No, if your centre-back is pressing, you're losing by a lot.
Yeah, strikers, it's quite nice. You know, in 2022, it's quite nice. Cristiano Ronaldo pressed last season less than any other attacking player in the Premier League. According to FBref, 6.5 pressures per 90 minutes. You know, I think I could press 6.5 times in 90 minutes, to be frank. It's about half as many as someone like Harry Kane, who we all think of as like, well, this guy doesn't do a huge amount of work off the ball anymore. And we all know Tuchel really values someone that works hard without the ball, that starts, you know, Chelsea defend as a unit, they attack as a unit. Having said that, imagine if he was on the bench. That was my only argument. I'm not making this seriously, because you can't spend £500,000 on someone that you're bringing off the bench for the biggest games. Sorry, £500,000 a week. But that's to me, at the best clubs in Europe, that is the role for Cristiano Ronaldo. If he wants to play for a team that might win the Champions League, he has to be a bench player. I can't wait for Des to clip this up, Des, our producer, and post this on social, and I am going to get... But it's true, and I'm sure you agree with me, Mike, that, like, you know, you've seen him in a Man United shirt. You can't really start Ronaldo against the best teams, can you?
No, well, you look at a lot of where his goals came from. God missing against Manchester City, Liverpool missing in action part two, and really Tottenham, he caught them at a time when they were still just getting going against Antonio Conte. I wouldn't imagine
he's
him
under
scoring.
Nuno, actually.
Oh, Nuno, yeah.
Late with Nuno.
Well, and pre Antonio Conte, and even at that time when Antonio Conte came in, Spurs weren't this force that they ended up being towards the end of the season. And if he would have had the opportunity to get some of those chances, maybe he would have put him away. But against the top teams in the Prem, he didn't really show up in this first season. And Chelsea, when I look at transfers and systems, so there was a stat that I remember looking at throughout last season, but I don't think he's ever scored against Chelsea. And Chelsea's always been known as a defensive, solid unit under Mourinho, all the way, even more so through Thomas Tuchel. And if you're a player that's going to transfer into another team, you have to give them a reason to transfer you. You have to have been a prolific goal scorer against them, or just have lit it up in the Prem. What he did last year was amazing for his age, but against high-quality opposition, I just don't think it was enough to see him getting over the line and seeing this deal done. Plus, the price tag is astronomical. I think Thomas Tuchel and the power. There's just so much going into this deal. But I'm right there with you, Benj. I think his goals and what he can give you in Champions League competition, sometimes you just can't overlook.
Yes. Well, you can. I think you can. I mean, right. So he had, by all accounts, this fantastic individual season for Manchester United.
Yep.
And he scored 18 goals in the Premier League.
Yep.
And 18. Manchester United scored 20-something fewer with him in the team than they did without him. And there are plenty of reasons behind that are not Ronaldo's fault. But equally, kind of everything, the promise, and I remember writing this piece a year ago when I was kind of saying, I don't really think Ronaldo is going to solve the issues of this team, and I think it's a big risk. And the argument you would make in your head, and you would write, whether you were pro or anti this deal for Manchester United, you would still make the case, but it's going to be good for the players around him to learn what it's like to work with him. Has it been good for Jadon Sancho, Marcus Rashford, Bruno Fernandes? Whether that's because, I mean, they may have learned a lot off Ronaldo on the training pitch, but I did not see it get applied on the pitch. You know, this is a player that took, you know, I think they had United the previous season had I wrote this, but I haven't got it in front of me, but I think it was more than half a dozen players in the Premier League had more than 40 shots. Those numbers cratered, and it basically became a Bruno and Ronaldo were the only players getting a high number of shots. So I thought so often it inhibited Sancho. There are other reasons why Sancho wasn't a success. And you saw in the preseason friendly how much better he is with an overlapping right back. I don't think he helped Rashford to end his sort of spiral. I'm not sure anyone else was that much better. He is a magnetic, powerful force. And I think still, if he goes in the right team, in the right role, he can make positive impacts. But if he's a sort of foundational piece of your team, the last few years with Juventus and Manchester United would suggest that at the moment, if your team is based around and your attack is based around getting the ball to Ronaldo, it's not going to be a title winning attack in the Champions League or the Premier League or Serie A.
Yeah, I agree with that. And this could be the humbling pie that he gets this transfer window. If just no one really wants him and he's a one-away striker that has to go back to United, and it becomes this struggle between he and Ten Hag trying to court him. So I ask you this, the choice is clear, presented by Gillette. And is the choice clear for Cristiano Ronaldo? Should he stay? Should he go? And if so, where?
For me, the choice is pretty clear, and he should stay. I think right now, he is kind of at risk of burning through a lot of goodwill from the only, for one of the clubs that holds him in the absolute highest regard. You see that Manchester United fans are already frustrated to see that kind of he doesn't want to stick around. And obviously we were told when Ronaldo joined a year ago and when he supposedly rejected Manchester City to join, we were told that there was this emotional pull. And if that emotional pull is so strong, do you really not want to help Manchester United improve? Do you not want to be a force for good under Erik ten Hag and to kind of lead this rebuild? You know, I know that I understand the desire to be selfish, to maximize your career. You know, he has worked so hard over his career and he's entitled to try and get the best out of it. But I'm sorry, Cristiano, that there is not that move available. I will add one caveat, one move that I could see, because it is a combination of, or it's a club that is so obsessed, that is so unreliable in the transfer window right now, and it would burn a lot of goodwill with another of the clubs that considers him a legend. The only team I can imagine taking Cristiano Ronaldo and paying him huge wages is Barcelona.
No way.
Look at what they're doing. I mean, Robert Lewandowski is a much better player. He's better right now. And clearly, but, you know, I'm looking for a team that's got money, and Barcelona are acting like a team that has money. I'm looking for a team that is obsessed with star power, doesn't necessarily think that much about building their squad with a plan in mind. That's Barcelona, baby. Sign him up.
Man. Ben, our producer, Des Norris, saying, don't you dare say Barcelona. He was one step ahead of you in that. I for a split second, I thought you were going to say Arsenal. And I was like, what? Because you teed it up with the bench role, backing up Gabriel Jesus. I thought maybe a little London under the bright lights of the Emirates. Thought you're going that direction. But Barcelona, wow, that would be the blockbuster. You talk about the entire city, the entire region of Catalonia burning down overnight. That would definitely be a new chapter in Cristiano Ronaldo's legacy. I agree with you that the choice is clear. As a United fan, look, at the end of the day, when I look at our attack, Anthony Martial is leading the line given their preseason match against Liverpool from what we saw, but we don't really have depth at the striker role. And because Ten Hag and United were planning on having Cristiano Ronaldo around because of the Frankie de Jong chase and just so much still being put towards getting rid of players, I think this would be disastrous if he left, and it would tarnish his legacy, especially in the red half of the city of Manchester. Wouldn't think he'd be welcome back if he went to any Premier League rivals or if he left in this manner when things are hard. And on the flip side of things, Ben, let's talk Todd Boehly. American owner, wealthy, wealthy guy, takes over Roman Abramovich's Chelsea. And, you know, he's no stranger to bidding on Chelsea. I think he bid back in 2019, $3 billion. Obviously, it wasn't the right time, but because of things off the field, the war in Ukraine forces Chelsea and Abramovich's hand, and he is the newest owner in the Premier League to with American backgrounds. How would you assess his job as a chairman slash sporting director, as you described, at Chelsea so far?
I'm going to cop out and say it's much too early to say, because at the moment I'm struggling a little bit to get my head around kind of where they're at. And I think that's on and off the field. And to an extent that is understandable, because when we look at the context of what led us to Todd Bowley's ownership, as you were explaining there, Mike, you know, these are pretty unprecedented circumstances. It's not just Roman Abramovich that's left as well, but, you know, like said, Petr Cech has left, Marina Granovskaya, Bruce Buck. And, you know, Chelsea are going to try and build out a best-in-class, was what I was told, best-in-class back office. But it doesn't exist yet, and you can't do that quickly, you know, whether because the people you want are at other clubs or they want to take time to think it through. It just doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, therefore, this a lot of this is falling on Bowley's shoulders. You know, obviously, he is the face of the consortium with him and Clear Lake and various other shareholders. He's doing an awful lot at once, and it's hard to know what the plan is that they're building towards. I mean, we sort of see this in recruitment where the midfield looks old, it looks a little bit light on numbers, and yet there's no real focus there. We're seeing them chasing three centre backs at once. I know they lost, obviously, and this is the other thing, they're playing a lot of catch up, you know, losing Rudiger and Christensen for nothing, basically losing Lukaku for nothing because it was that difficult keeping him around. It is, you know, Burnley has started on the back foot. I know that people that know Chelsea better than me say that, you know, that there's been a lot of people very impressed by his attitude, his willingness to listen and be open and honest and communicate. But, you know, he has come in at a very tough time. And I think for now, actually the fairest thing to do is just go, take some, you know, let's not assess him. Let's see where he is, maybe not even at the end of this window. In a year's time, we might have an idea of how well Todd Bowley has changed this club on and off the pitch.
Yeah, I'm thinking about some of the players they're linked with, and really that need to fit into Thomas Tuchel's system and wants and desires, and also the need to make an impression as a Premier League owner and chairman with a blockbuster signing. And, you know, what do you make of the signing of Raheem Sterling? Do you think that's enough to wow Chelsea fans, to give them hope?
I love it. I think it's fantastic. Because the sort of issue when you looked at Chelsea's front three last season really looked like it was going to be on that left of the three. You know, obviously Lukaku struggled, but every time I watched Chelsea and Kai Havertz was playing there, I was like, well, there's your solution. And obviously that's what Tuchel concluded quite swiftly. Havertz is he's not really a false nine. I hate when... Can I just go on a rant? I hate
no,
when
absolutely.
He is a bit more, but he's kind of like a target man as well. I just and people have said this about Sterling, that Raheem Sterling's going to play the false nine. No, he's not. He's not going to do what, you know, a Leo Messi or a Francesco Totti did and start in that deep number 10 role and do stuff from that. He's going to play like a poacher in behind. Sorry, rant over. He's Sterling, not a false nine. Kai Havertz maybe. But Sterling was the kind of missing piece for me in that attack. He's an upgrade on Pulisic and Werner, someone that gets in the box, gets shots away. He does have that Werner-ish tendency to miss a lot of big chances, but he scores an awful lot as well. I think the second most goal contributions of any player under Pep Guardiola after Leo Messi is Raheem Sterling. He's consistent, he's excellent, he's going to have a point to prove to Guardiola and to Gareth Southgate and make sure he nails down that World Cup squad. I love it. And also, you know, he's a London boy as well. I think in every way, this is a really, really good signing. The only thing I would say is a slight cloud, a dark lining on the silver cloud that we have. He's quite old, you know, at least in terms of, you know, 27, is it? You know, he's got to hit the ground running in years one, two, and three. It's not a signing for 10 years. It's a signing for three to 5 years. Could be great, though, for those 3 to 5 years.
Well, given the likes that you have, you already have English talent there. You talk about the World Cup and the World Cup being on the horizon, the motivation for players. You know, that's one thing that Boehly and this Chelsea team have in their pocket. But talk to me about his relationship with Thomas Tuchel, because when you're an American owner and you come into the Premier League, you have a lot to do. You have a lot of rebuild and refresh in this Chelsea squad that didn't perform to expectations last season. Now, is that relationship, do you know much about that relationship, how that is? And also, you know, is Thomas Tuchel or someone within that staff advising him?
Thomas Tuchel is advising Boehly quite heavily, and that he has real influence. Obviously, as I was saying earlier, a lot of the people that were above Tuchel have left the club. You know, your Bruce Bucks, your Granovskayas. So inevitably, when that vacuum of power is created, something fills it. And it's pretty clearly Tuchel. You know, we are seeing this when they're looking at someone like Presnel Kimpembe, who used to work with Tuchel at PSG. You can see that that's a sign of his growing authority. And don't forget as well, he is hugely popular with supporters. Like every game at Stamford Bridge I was at last season, you'd hear those chants of "We've got Super Tommy Tuchel." He wants to be there for the long haul. Chelsea fans want him there for the long haul. He knows what he's doing. And yes, it was a disappointing season last season by their very high standards. And I think, I mean, actually, to be fair, as he said in the FA Cup final post-match press conference, they got to two finals and just happened to lose to Liverpool. You know, it's not bad. Given the circumstances, what I think is one of the most trying seasons any club has gone through in the Premier League in recent years. I think he's, I mean, safe as houses, really. I know it's Chelsea, but it's a different sort of Chelsea. And Todd Boehly won't want to be quite as like Abramovich sacking any manager once there's a bad run of five games. If nothing else, there just aren't that many coaches that Chelsea haven't burned their way through. But yeah, you know, this has been a trying time for Tuchel, but one in which he's emerged more admired and more influential at Chelsea, that's for sure.
Oh, that happens when you deliver the Champions League in the way that they did against one of your Premier League rivals in Manchester City in year one, in the style that Thomas Tuchel did. And I love what you said about how he was able to miraculously steer this Chelsea ship to safety. And when you're a new owner coming in, and you're really, Todd Boehly's a hands-on sort of owner. And given that, he will want to have his face there. He will want to have his impact there. But I agree with you, in his best confidant, the best thing he can do is rely on the experience of Thomas Tuchel, who's been there for the good times and the uncertain times, and has still come out on top. The soccer calendar knows no breaks, so it's always all systems go here on Kay Golasso. Staying on top of the global game is an all-day gig. Then there's the added stress of being a helplessly loyal Manchester United fan who obsesses over every minor detail concerning my club. Throw in, on top of that, the studio lights, the public speaking, the breaking news. It's a recipe for perspiration. Nuh-uh, not for yours truly. Fortunately for me, sweat and bad odors are two things I never have to worry about, thanks to the long-lasting power of Gillette Clear Gel Antiperspirant. I can get on with my day, which mainly involves staying on top of the latest Manchester United news and telling myself it's strictly for work purposes without breaking a sweat. Gillette Clear Gel Antiperspirant goes on an anti-white mark formula and protects your nostrils from those nasty under armpit smells while giving you 72 hours sweat protection. If you want all day freshness, the choice is clear. Gillette Clear Gel Antiperspirant is a tap-in. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Kay Golasso. I'm Michael Lahoud here with James Benj. Benj, so far, so good on the show. We're talking Chelsea. We're talking transfers. And let's dive into this year's Chelsea transfer window. New owner, same coach. How would you rate their transfer window so far? Raheem Sterling, looks like Koulibaly might be a done deal or close. Nathan Aki, talk to me about that. How'd you rate them?
I actually like all three of those signings. If we start with the big one, we were obviously talking about this beforehand. Raheem Sterling for me, and maybe get your scores as well. That's a 8 out of 10 transfer as well. Decent price paid for an England international, someone who knows the league, and you can get them in straight away. Koulibaly, who kind of as we speak, he's been doing his medical in London and then he's going to fly out to the States next week. That's pretty much all done and dusted. I'm intrigued. I remember talking to the Napoli owner Aurelio De Laurentiis 6 years ago, and even at then, Chelsea were desperate to get him. You know, Antonio Conte was phoning up De Laurentiis saying, please, please give me Koulibaly. And, you know, I can find the videos on my social media page. And De Laurentiis was like, sorry, I need him. Which kind of does beg the question, why can he go now? At 31, do Napoli feel like they don't need him anymore? He wasn't going to sign a new contract, so this is a good way to cash in. I think if you have to replace Antonio Rudiger, it's a good signing. I think in an ideal world, they would have kept Rudiger, who is better. But Koulibaly, it's a very... I mean, he does everything really well. You see some videos on it and him on social media. He's going to have those Rudiger-y qualities of advancing the ball up the pitch, maybe even taking the odd shot and hitting them really well, in addition to being just an absolutely top-tier, dominant centre-back. He'll let them, you know, put him and anyone else pretty much next to him. You can play a back four, which Tuchel hasn't always been that comfortable doing. Ake, better than he gets credit for. When I saw him play at City, and it was infrequently, I thought he played well. You know, for a left-sided centre-back in a back three, I think he's pretty solid. My thing with that would be, and I know we'll come to talk about a few other players as well, but if you sign Ake and you lose Levi Colwill, who lit it up with Huddersfield last season in the Championship, really highly rated, and a lot of Premier League teams will try and get him if he thinks there isn't a path to first-team football. I would rather have Colwill as my fifth, sixth choice centre-back than Ake. If Ake's only coming for squad depth, you've got that in your academy. And we've seen so often Chelsea losing these really talented youngsters because they haven't given him a chance. I don't know what you think as well on those three.
Yeah, I think the fact that we talked about Ronaldo not coming in, I think that would have been a distraction from the real need for this Chelsea team. Koulibaly, I love. He's won the AFCON recently, captained the team to victory. And in that run-in in the tournament, the fact that he stepped up in big games, he tends to step up for Napoli. And in big games for Senegal, he steps up and he will be their leader at the upcoming World Cup. He has that confidence factor and that calm. To play in the Premier League, you need to have swagger. You need to be able to, you know, go up against the biggest and strongest, fastest. But you need to have that air of calmness in big games when you're going up against the cities, the Liverpools. And you know, I was going to ask you if you thought, and you answered that by saying, is this an upgrade in Koulibaly versus Antonio Rudiger? I think given where they're at right now, I would argue that I kind of think it's an upgrade for Chelsea getting Koulibaly versus Rudiger. Rudiger, the way he ended his Chelsea career, I mean, he was lights out last season. I mean, hitting bangers from 40 yards out, playing at the peak of his powers. But he still has that ability to come up with one rash error, one red card away that we could see get exposed in Madrid in the upcoming season. For Koulibaly, a Chelsea team that's trying to find their identity with a manager that really loves this back three system, they need that calming presence. It's not going to be Thiago Silva. He's getting older. They need someone who's playing at the peak of his powers, and I think they'll have him in Koulibaly. And given what you said about Raheem Sterling earlier, let's dive into English talent. Conor Gallagher, do you think that he's a player that could break through in this upcoming Chelsea team?
I don't think there are many more unorthodox footballers in the Premier League than Conor Gallagher. Conor Gallagher doesn't really do anything that a big six midfielder tends to do. He has a skill set that when you compare it to a lot of other Chelsea midfielders, they don't have. So in that sense, fantastic. What a guy to get. But what you really have is someone who presses hard, wins the ball back, takes a lot of shots and takes them well and gets in positions to make a contribution in the final third. But as a central midfielder, he's not a big one for possession, for build-up, for setting the tempo, for breaking down low blocks. And he didn't have to do that at Crystal Palace, where, you know, Patrick Vieira did wonderful to maximize Gallagher's qualities. It was a 4-3-3 without the ball, with Gallagher dropping in to be a midfielder, and then almost immediately a 4-4-2 when Palace got the ball back and Gallagher was one of the two strikers. And obviously there are lots of teams that do something similar, but not to the dramatic extent that Palace did. How that comes across in a Thomas Tuchel team, I don't know. And I'm really excited to find out. I think it could be great. I also think Gallagher's not so fantastic that you change the whole identity of how you play.
Yeah.
Even if you switch to a 4-3-3, you know, you would have Jorginho, Kovacic, Kante, Mount. I won't come to talk about the midfield anyway in a moment. You'd have all of them ahead of him in the pecking order. And I think, I don't know, but I think it this may end up being like not the perfect fit of manager and player. But like, give it a go, man. He's a really interesting footballer, and I can't wait to see how he gets on at Chelsea.
Yeah, it'll provide good competition given this Chelsea midfield is aging and injuries have been a big problem. And a player who's on the cusp of breaking into the English national team in a World Cup year, this could be the break that he and England are looking for. And given what they've done in the transfer window, and they've been active so far and continue to be active, have they done enough to challenge as a club for the Premier League title next season?
No, not quite. That doesn't mean that they can't. Like, I think Chelsea could be the third best team in Europe. Could be.
Wow.
But I think the first and second best teams are English. I know this wasn't reflected in the Champions League final, but I think they're English, and I think they are way out in front. And I think Chelsea are missing actually a few pieces. I'll be intrigued to see whether Ben Chilwell's back to his best at left back, or left wing back. If not, that's a problem. I still think, just compared to what you can confidently predict City and Liverpool will get from their forwards.
Yeah.
Do we see enough goals, even with the addition of Sterling, in that front line? I think it needs a player like Mo Salah or Erling Haaland. That's what what Liverpool and City are going to have. And it's probably what Chelsea don't quite. I think Raheem Sterling will get quite a lot of goals, but I think if he's your top scorer, you probably aren't winning the title. The big thing for me, though, is midfield. I think Jorginho, N'Golo Kante getting older, getting more, in Kante's case, getting injured more. Jorginho was never the best defensively, and I think that started to get found out last season. And it just feels a little light on numbers, whatever system Tuchel's going to use. I think it needs one more really quality player in there. Even then, I think if City and Liverpool are at the peak of their powers again this season, Chelsea are going to struggle to keep up with that pace. And I think it's more likely to be that they will find themselves in a little bit of a battle with Tottenham and with Arsenal. We'll see.
I'm so glad you said it.
And with Arsenal. I think that you, 1 and 2, I couldn't tell you the order. 3, 4, 5. I mean, I've got a rough idea of where they'll land, but I think there's quite a bit of flexibility there. But I think Chelsea will probably be nearer to Tottenham, Arsenal, than they will be to Liverpool and City. What do you think?
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think this Chelsea team, unless they do wonders, in particular in midfield, they could miss out on top four. I pick your Arsenal team and also Tottenham, given they've been very active and they've had depth. They have a lot of depth now in that system that Antonio Conte wants to run. In that middle of the park, contract situations is what worries me about Chelsea. Jorginho's contract is going to be up. N'Golo Kante's contract is going to be up. And given that there's no commitment from the club, there's no commitment really from the players. I know Jorginho came out and said that he wants to stay at Stamford Bridge, but why not go for a younger midfielder? Why not go somewhere like Portugal or France, where you have young talent that's up and coming that can fit into that counterattacking, high-pressing defensive shell and really springboarding into free-flowing attack? And also, given in the attack, the need for a striker, it looks like Kai Havertz will be that person unless Thomas Tuchel is implored, Todd Boehly and the board that is, to go after Robin Lewandowski and the uncertainty of his career. That's a big gamble, and that's a big gamble to put all your chips in for a player that's clouded in uncertainty. Will he be able to leave Bayern or not? And he's still under contract. So I worry about this Chelsea team still going into next season.
Yeah, I agree. I also think we do have to kind of remember that it didn't all the instability, all the turbulence, it doesn't all stop when Roman Abramovich sells the club. You know, there is a whole new organization, a new identity to Chelsea, and that needs to bed in. That will take time. There will be like hiccups along the way. I've got no doubt of that. And I think in the end, you know, Chelsea have all those sort of inbuilt advantages that any other kind of Premier League or any other member of the Big Six do, you know, huge revenue, Champions League money coming in, quality players, great academy. They got all those things, so they will be fine. But I think maybe even in this stage of the summer where we love to talk about, oh, everyone's got a chance at the title, maybe this summer we kind of need to think about it as a reset point for Chelsea, and that it might be 2 years maybe before they're back up to where they were when they were winning the Champions League final. I mean, hey, who knows? They've got a world-class manager. They could achieve anything, especially in cup competitions. But I think 38 games of the Premier League might show us that they're a little way off Liverpool and City.
Well, Chelsea may have a world-class manager, but we have a world-class sports personality in you, James Bench. Thank you, as always, your contributions, your thoughts on everything English Premier League and world football. This has been Kay Golasso, started with Ronaldo, ended with Chelsea and Thomas Tuchel and Todd Bowley. Final thoughts, James Bench, as we close out.
I'm very intrigued to find out who this Saudi Arabian club are that are offering Cristiano Ronaldo what sounds like all the money in the world. I would not be doing that if I was Ronaldo. He's still got, and I'm sure he still feels he has a point to prove in Europe. I mean, the reason this guy is one of the greatest of all time is because he always feels like he's got a point to prove to someone. And I don't doubt he'll feel like he has a point to prove against Chelsea when he runs up against them in whatever club colours it might be.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what Ronaldo does and where his mentality shifts to, because that relationship with he and Manchester United as a whole is going to need to be repaired. Where this Chelsea offer and attempt has been rejected. And really, if he takes the money and runs, that's the biggest damage to his legacy, not his bank account, which doesn't need any more dollars and cents. I mean, this guy is just loaded and he's earned every single penny. But with so much rebuilding happening at the club, I'm interested to see, should he show up for preseason, what happens? He and Erik ten Hag, and on the Chelsea front, gosh, these transfers that are happening, they're so close to happening for their back line. I'm interested to see how they gel with an aging Thiago Silva in the end. But as always, we'll see in the coming weeks and months. Good news is Premier League soccer is almost back. This has been Kay Golasso. I'm Mike Lahoud. He's James Bench. Goodbye.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.